Guys, yes. I'm really glad we pressed record because Susie and I have just been chit-chatting over here for like an hour. We're like going to run out of material. We're never going to run out of material. Who am I kidding? For like an hour, we've just been chatting.
I mean, I have a lot some of this. On my mind. This is episode 507. As a matter of fact, I was listening to another podcast, which shall remain nameless. Even though I enjoyed it, I was like annoyed at how they were so entertained by each other and they kept laughing too hard at everything. And I was like, this is so annoying. And then I realized that's what we do.
That's
exact. Like, why do people enjoy this?
We're adorable and charming and hilarious. What are you saying?
I know. I mean, I'm so grateful.
We do what we can over here.
I guess people feel like they're just in on the conversation. It's so nice.
They are. And, they like those moments where I can't remember what something's called and then they are yelling it at their radio and
they like
stay tuned for
you.
What you'll know and Sarah won't in this episode of the Brain Candy Podcast.
Right. They feel better about themselves because they know the answers that we don't
yes.
know.
Yes.
Oh, Sarah Louise.
How are you, Suze?
Well, as you know, I've had a rough week.
You have.
Went to the hospital, had a problem with my nether region.
Yeah.
But hopefully things will start improving here. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been a rough year for everyone.
It's been rough. You know what I feel like is happening is like, it's like.
Our pets' heads are falling off.
Heads are right. It's like things, there's just enough of an uptick for like you to kind of let your guard down a bit.
It's like when you get back from a challenge and you get sick.
Yeah. Absolutely. You've been, oh my God,
yes.
This is exactly it. We're probably going to see a lot of this from a lot.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We always talk about how when we go on the challenge, everything's great, hunky-dory, and then the moment we get home, we get sick because you're not survival mode anymore. Mm-hmm. You're like safe and happy and comfortable.
And your body needs to actually shut itself down to rebuild and like... Yeah. Work. It needs to like take you out. Like,
so my butthole is on a vacation right now with some Vicodin.
Oh, God.
Any hoodles. Wow. Did you read about the car with the bees in it?
No.
I thought you would be on top of this. This is your kind of story.
What do you mean?
This poor...
I see a very... what I would call an AWH or an accident waiting to happen. I refer to all things. I go, oh, that's an AWH.
No, I do
know this is an acronym that nobody else knows about.
AWH. Wait, I gotta write that down.
I like say this. I'll be like out and I'll like see something. Like, I'm like, oh, AWH. I'll like say it out loud to myself. No, I'm around people who are like, what?
Like, that's my new favorite thing. Either that or the Vicodin kicked in.
I love either. Susie's going to be my best audience because she's all hopped up on drugs. Sarah's extra funny when her audience is on Vicodin.
No, they didn't. They didn't begin with the bees in the car. This poor fool parked his car in New Mexico at an Albertsons and went inside for 10 minutes. And when he came out, there were 15,000 bees in his car.
Oh, they do this.
Yes,
this is what. Oh my God, we learned about this.
Yeah.
And we learned about there's the guys in New York City who's bee police officers.
Yes, the bee police officers. Right.
The bee cops. Not bee cops. Bee cops.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that tickles my funny bone. Am I on Vicodin? I'm not on anything. Oh, God, this is so funny.
Right. So he comes out, and at first, he just gets in his car and goes driving and doesn't realize. Yeah. And he's driving down the highway and figured out we got a problem.
AWH.
He called 911. And they sent this guy who's an off-duty firefighter, but he's a beekeeper hobbyist.
I love that.
He came with his box.
Yes.
And he said that, the reason this happens is that the queen has gone to look for a new hive or whatever. And so all her boyfriends follow her. And he said that...
Like they do.
I guess... My lipstick brings all the boys.
Yeah. He... The box that he brings, he sprays with a thing that smells like the queen.
Yeah.
So all these bees think it's the queen and they get in there. And he said, like, the first 14,000 is no problem. But it's that last 1,000 that takes some extra time.
Wait a sec.
Yeah. And he said he spent extra time making sure because he didn't want one of those poor bees to be left behind.
Oh,
nice.
And I know that the beekeepers, they care. He really does care about every one of those bees.
He said
they are
do
interesting.
Anything.
I really love like that beekeeper personality.
I know. It's a really beautiful thing because we do need bees, but they are scary.
And they're just slow people, I think. But like not like method, like like the tortoise, like in the best way.
Yeah.
Like no need to rush.
Yeah, they're thoughtful.
Just they're thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
And not like, you know, it's basically the opposite of me.
He said he'd just gotten home and he was eating dinner with his family, his two kids, but he said, I just had to do it because I didn't want anything to happen to those bees.
To those bees. You know, it's so funny because all of us are like, protect that man. And my mind went to, you don't want that guy to get stung.
For sure. What would you
going,
do, though,
no.
if you were driving down the road?
Susie.
What would you do?
There's a short of list of, like, what wouldn't I do? Like, flail my arms, freak out, like.
You would just yell A-W-H.
Oh my gosh. No, there would be, you know what I think actually, I say that, but I know myself when those moments have happened of like total panic, like it was either you or Ren somewhere in the last, well, it's probably now the last 2 years where there was like a spider or a bee or something like that on the person.
I and feel I like I like, was there for this.
Yeah. And I was like, hang on one sec. And you were like that. Somebody said like, that was the calmest. I'm so glad you reacted like that. Cause if you would have reacted, I would have freaked out.
Well, cause remember how you told Ren that bees don't really hurt. And I was like,
yes, they're like, fine. They don't sting.
They're fine.
I still am not. I still would like a poll. Have we done a poll about this?
No, I think you're right. I think we do need that.
Yeah, I'm still going to... I'm going to write that in my notes.
Yeah, is it like no big whoop?
Is it no biggie? Or is it like...
Pretty painful.
Pretty painful. Because like...
And I really am not the person to ask because, as you know, I have the allergy. So maybe the pain is worse for me. I don't know.
That's what I think. I think it's got to be like you're... And is it like a scale... of pain and I don't know.
I
or
do
maybe
think
it's like
that,
my relationship with that the pain and that I because everything's and I'm learning the older I get it's like all relative or in your head or like your past experience with however scary you think it's going to be so scary it is or painful it is.
I don't know why but I feel like if bees didn't buzz that it wouldn't be so bad.
Agreed. Well
that
and also
noise
flies
is
wouldn't
scary.
Be so annoying if they weren't making
That's
that
right.
noise too. Oh I hate that noise.
I'll tell you what's not annoying, and that is getting my HelloFresh delivery.
Not annoying at all.
Or painful.
No.
HelloFresh is the opposite. It is soothing and stress-free because they are a meal planning magician who sends you beautiful foods and recipes each week that you can make for your family. And it's so much easier than having to go to the grocery store and meal plan and all that stuff. They do all the work for you. And I love that they're sourced directly from growers and delivered from the farm to your front door. Contact-free, of course. And I mean, it's such a good value because you get exactly what you need for your family. And it's so much cheaper than shopping at the grocery store too. So I just love it.
Way.
Love it, love
yes.
it, love it. And it's yummy.
So good. Oh,
I swear, it is
so
good.
Easy. Just like, I don't want to think about that.
Okay, so... There's a deal for you. Go to HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy12 and use BrainCandy12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. Go to HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy12 and use code BrainCandy12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. Yummy, yummy recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, the bees...
Now I'm hungry.
The bees were rescued. All is well. I did think the guy was funny, though, because he was, like, real worried because it wasn't even his car.
Oh, my God.
He had borrowed it.
But, like, Can you imagine that conversation before, too? Like, I always like to think, like, that whole scene is, like, something out of a movie. He's, like, right. telling his friend, like, can I just borrow your car? I'm just going to run to the grocery store real quick. I'll be 10 minutes tops. It'll be no big deal. Oh, my God. Okay, but, like, don't let anything happen to me. What can go wrong? I'm going to be gone for 10 minutes.
Then he'll come back and he'll be like, good news, bad news.
How do you feel about honey? Went to the grocery store, got some honey.
Got some honey.
No, not in the grocery store.
The old-fashioned way. Oh, God. Oh, but golly. Hashtag save the bees. We do love our bees.
We love them. We love them so much. There are bees on my shoes right now, actually.
I watched... Oh, okay.
Not real bees. A drawing of a bee. Like an embroidered
bee. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, not real. You were like,
Thank heavens.
Yeah. So I was just talking to Susie about a spider on my ceiling, so... Be like, this house is infested.
Yeah, it's like a real wildlife situation over there in the suburbs.
Well, that it is. I do live. There are coyote warning signs, like, you know.
Yeah, we just heard some coyotes here last night.
Oh, I love that.
That was scary. I don't know, though. I feel like they would eat me.
There's a law. I didn't even know this, and thank goodness they passed it. There's like an ordinance or something, but whatever it's called, in this area. I don't know if it's all of Thousand Oaks or just this neighborhood here that you can't have outdoor cats.
Good.
Good is right because six of mine died.
Six? Jesus Christ.
Five or six. Maybe not six. Maybe four or five.
Sarah, jeez.
Maybe three. We have to ask my mom. My childhood memory says six, but really it was not that. It was like probably like four. But that's still a lot. They just never came back, and we know it was coyotes, because that's what happens when you live in Wildwood. You're going to have your cat eaten by a coyote, because they like those.
That's good. It is, even without coyotes, it's too dangerous out there for our little kitties. Keep them inside, my God. Yeah. They love laying around.
They love laying around.
Okay.
They do.
I watched the last Blockbuster. Did you watch it?
Oh, no, not yet.
It's real cute.
Oh, good. You know what's funny is the reason why I didn't watch it is because I thought we had already talked about it on our show. But
why?
I think we had – I don't know. I was like, oh, maybe I already know this story, which is a weird thing.
I have no idea. You know what? We did talk about like how they were rent – you know, you could come for an experience, like a 90s experience and watch a movie overnight. I remember that.
Yes.
Well, the documentary, which is on Netflix, The Irony, of course – is interesting.
Oh my God, that is really funny.
Right? Netflix is telling the story about how they ruined Blockbuster. And what I loved about it was that this is in Oregon, and the woman that runs the store is like just this hero of, she just loves her job and she's just really committed to it and creating this community, which I think is why it's the last one left, because they still make a profit, you know?
People are pilgrimage going on pilgrimage to
now they are. Yes. But I think even before that they weren't just coming in for videos; they were coming in for the connection.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That she did something to create. Okay, so she owned the Blockbuster while it was still like a Blockbuster,
and
not like
is.
An ironic Blockbuster.
Yeah, it still is a franchise. It's no different, and it's the last one, and they just renewed her for two more years, but like,
oh my God, it's just her.
Yeah,
why can't they say that she owns? I mean, they should just like let her own Blockbuster, for Christ's sake.
True.
Like, just give it to her. What are you still taking money from this woman for?
I know, because she is so nice, and she like has to go to Target on like Tuesdays whenever the new releases come out and buy copies to put in her Blockbuster.
My God.
It's adorable. And she like buys candy from Costco and stuff. And it's just real special.
Well, I want to see this.
I'm not kidding you. I shed a tear.
I will. I know. I'm getting like, because I just love anytime somebody puts thought and care into like.
Well, and you can tell like she's kind of like super into the fact that she's this icon now.
Oh, well, that's kind of fun,
like,
too.
It's real cute. Like, she feels important.
Oh, yeah, a scene.
Yes. And I like
that. It would
that.
Be really nice if the thing that you valued and put a lot of energy into finally got attention and recognized, and people were like, we appreciate this so much. We're going to make a documentary about it.
Yeah.
I would feel like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's so cute, Sarah. And it's also like the nostalgia of it and like sort of the story of how these video stores came to be and then why they collapsed and all that. It's great.
I now go to a Trader Joe's in my neighborhood that is next door to what used to be the Blockbuster.
Oh.
And every time I go to that parking lot, I am transported.
Oh my God.
To the nights where I remember, like, I remember my mom pulling up and running up to the door and putting the video in. I remember, like, and of course it was something, you know, before, but I think with COVID and everything, whatever business was there previously is now gone out of business as well. So it's just empty, which in my mind, turned it into, like, it's been empty since Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
It's just like frozen
Ghost
time
town.
For me like
yeah.
that. Yes. And it is so interesting. So, yes, that nostalgia is like, I can only imagine. I can't wait to watch
it. It's interesting when people explore the sensory idea, like how it smelled and the sound that the VHS case would make when you open it. And
yes.
All these things.
Oh, my God.
Like you say, they transport you back to that time.
Yeah.
Now, we were too poor to actually go to Blockbuster, so I was only going with, like, friends when I would stay overnight at their house. But I thought it was, like, super fancy to be a member at Blockbuster.
Wow.
Because, you know, those late fees, they're
expensive. I was just going to say, was it the late fees? Yeah.
They sneak
and
up
And Lord
on
help
you
if you lose one of the... I think I just at the last garage sale I had, got rid of a Blockbuster video. I had 12 Monkeys, that DVD.
Oh, my God.
In
you
a Blockbuster
never returned
case.
It?
Never returned it, ever. I still have a five... I probably still have
oh
a
Oh, my God,
balance.
What is with
probably
you?
Millions.
You're probably the reason they went bankrupt.
It's me. Who didn't return 12 Monkeys. People were really
like,
dying.
What year? What
it was
year
a great
would
movie.
You say?
Oh, gosh. It was on DVD.
Okay.
And it had to have been I know where I was living. So I was living in Orange County, and it was when I had my own apartment. And I had this apartment. I got it when I was 17. My aunt, I got it. Somebody signed for it because, well, when you're young and you're a boss bitch already, you get your own place. I had a roommate, so I'm not really mad, but you know. So when was that? I was 17 or 18 in 2000. So it was got to be somewhere around 1999 to 2000.
Wow, no, Twin 2004, Towers still intact.
2004.
Oh, okay.
No, 2004.
Okay.
There you go. 2004.
Wow.
Around then.
Did you like the movie?
I love the movie. Clearly, I kept it.
You're like, I still have it.
Still have it. Yeah. That's
well,
bad math.
Okay, but at the time, were you just like, I'm keeping this or what?
No, guaranteed it didn't go like that. It was.
What did I want to know?
Oh, no. It was. Oh, God. Sarah. Look, I'm. Oh, my God. It's like I'm talking to myself over here. Susie. Oh, my God. I can't believe I just called you. I was like in my head talking to. I was like, I have ADD. I was guaranteed. I'm like talking to myself in my own head here, like, you got to return this. You got to return this.
Right.
You should definitely put it out to return. Put it right next to the door to return. Put it in the car to return. Did not return it. Then I moved.
Right.
And then I was like, well, not returning this shit now.
Oh, my God.
Don't have to ever go back to that Blockbuster. Guaranteed that
See,
is what happened.
That would keep me up at night. That's why I have anal problems.
there you go. And I just let it go. So
good for you. One
That's
thing
why I'm
I will
so regular.
Never let go of is my love of Function of Beauty.
Never. You know what I dreamt last night?
What?
I dreamt that my mom got her Function of Beauty because she's been commenting on my hair all the time, you know, and like,
right.
She's like, I love it. It just looks so good. And I love your natural curls. And they're just so like freaking popping right now because of this. I mean, they are so good. And that's all I'm doing is watching this. And I dreamt that my mom got it. And then I woke up and I got so excited that I picked up my phone to go talk to her about it and realized it was a dream and that she lives in Costa Rica and probably didn't get that. It doesn't have that.
Well, we should get it instead. You should get it instead because you just go on to Function of Beauty and you take their quiz and you tell them about your hair type and your hair goals, like length or volume or oil control, and then they'll send you a customized product for your hair. You can choose your color and fragrance, or you can have no fragrance and no dye, whatever you want. It's vegan and cruelty-free, which I love, and no sulfates or parabens. I mean, come on.
And you can get it so it is curly girl friendly.
Curly girl friendly.
No silicones. Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's great. Never buy off the shelf just to be disappointed ever again. Go to functionofbeauty.com/braincandy to take your quiz and save 20% on your first order. That applies to their full range of customized hair, skin, and body products. Go to functionofbeauty.com/braincandy. Mm-hmm. Let them know we sent you and get 20% off your order. Functionofbeauty.com/braincandy.
Yes. My body wash is on its way, and thank goodness it is my favorite.
Very exciting.
I left it at my old place.
Oh, that was a big mistake.
So I had been, but it's arriving soon. So
next thing I watched was the Tina Turner documentary.
Oh, HBO. I want to see that real bad.
I recommend it. It was great.
Yes, I've heard really good things about it.
As you know, I love a rockumentary. And
rockumentary. Oh my God. I have never heard that word.
Except last time I said it and you loved it then.
Oh.
When I talked about the Bee Gees, you were like, I love that.
Well, I'm nothing if not consistent.
Yeah. And I love it too. It was really good. It was so interesting. Of course, we all know about like the Tina and Ike domestic violence relationship. And I mean, it's become part of her story and like her identity really. Yeah. And the documentary did a really good job of telling that story, but then telling how it's unfair that that was then her story.
Right.
And how she's like, okay, I'll write a book and then I'll tell the story and then it'll be done. But then it was never done. And then the movie came out. And then, you know, Angela Bassett did such a great job. And I think she even won the Oscar for that. And and it's like she cannot escape the Ike abuse.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
And you know what? It also became really like, for lack of a better term, like cemented or like... in like pop culture history, and songs were used. Like it's
a joke reference. Sometimes, yeah.
And like they reference that. I know so many lyrics to songs where they talk about like, you know, an Ike and Tina Turner love kind of like, and like to have that.
Yeah. They became like emblematic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of like toxic abusive relationships. And The only thing I didn't love about the documentary was just that I still don't feel like I know her at all. I think that's kind of the point, is that she just wanted to entertain people and never wanted to be like a persona or like a human. She wanted to be like an icon and a performer, but she didn't really want people to know her business.
Yeah.
Well. But she's like 80 years old.
Yeah.
And so beautiful and just stunning. And
I mean, the legs.
The legs.
I guarantee you at 81 there, like when she did her reunion, or not reunion tour, her like farewell tour, I remember being like, oh my God.
Just the energy.
Yes. Like, dang, I don't have that energy now.
She just has something so special and like electric. On stage. It's so fun to watch. So that was really cool to see all that footage. And
so many good songs. Mm-hmm. I'm a private dancer for my
God.
I love it.
I wonder if that was in there. I don't remember that song being in there.
Oh my gosh, it was great. So many good songs.
So I recommend that.
Did you see Sound of Metal yet?
No, but I told Adam we need to watch it.
Yeah, Adam's going to love it too. And he's a freaking sound guy.
He's a freaking sound guy. I said, I think this is a movie where our interests will overlap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so excited for I can't wait for you to watch it. Then I want to hear what you say about it. I love it.
Yeah, I think I'll really like it.
Oh, and I'll watch the blockbuster one and cry a little bit.
I did also, my last viewing documentary was the Clive Davis one on Netflix.
Huh, I don't know.
He's like the music executive. He like discovered Whitney Houston.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, pretty much everybody.
Yes.
That was fun to watch too, because then that's just like all different kinds of music. And I never knew his story and how he's bisexual. He identifies as bisexual now, and he's like an older guy, which I thought was unusual, but that was another one I would recommend to people if you're in the market for a little viewing pleasure.
Yes. Okay. And I mean, that's gotta be, you love the music history. So.
Yeah. And just the business of music is so weird and has changed so much over time. Kind of bums me out now. Cause funnily enough, combining two of those documentaries, I used to work at Blockbuster Music, which was, it wasn't rentals, but they had a listening center, and you could ask for us to open any CD in the whole store, and you could listen to it before you bought it. Mm-hmm. And so that was super fun. And we had the same shelves as the regular Blockbuster, where like, you know, staff picks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like, I put so much thought into my staff
pick. Oh my God, Suze, what was on?
Well, we changed them all the time. It was like whatevs, but.
I would love to know. I would love a playlist, a Susie staff picks from that era and what you were listening to. Please, please give us some of the bangers on your list.
Well, I mean, but then, like, you put all this thought into it. Like, I went through a big Billy Joel phase at that time. That was when I first really fell in love with him and, like, Harry Connick Jr. and stuff. But then you put all this thought in and you put the CD up and it would be like, Susie pick. And then some other staff member would like swap it out for like homoerotic or
silly stuff.
And I would always get genuinely mad about it.
That's really funny.
But like that to me is what I miss about retail in general is like when you can go to a record store or you could go to a video store or whatever and ask people who really love music or movies or whatever and say, like, what do you recommend? And they could, like, help you find treasures. Because that really
is
hard to do now.
Connection and community. It's the same thing about that Blockbuster, why that was good.
Yeah.
And now Susie, it's not just hard. It's damn near impossible. Because if you even just try to Google what's the best, mascara, you're going to get, because, I mean, I say that because I worked at a beauty supply store. And I would, I loved to like spend the time to really make sure that that customer was going home with something that was perfect for them and blah, blah, blah. And now if I just like Google, like what's the best this, you're getting like an ad. I'm getting like Glamour magazines, like what they've paid to tell me is the best. And I'm like, no. I want the person who knows the info and like the one-on-one. What we're really missing is the connection and community.
If you go to a store, do you think it would still be like that? Like if you go to a makeup store?
No, I don't think it is because it depends on what the store is because it used to be like that at Nordstrom and I used to work at Nordstrom too. And then I watched it as a customer change and then I went a bit ago. It was before an event that you and I did and I got my makeup done and I cried.
I remember that.
Yeah. Remember? And then I was so mad. And it was so awful. And then she was telling me the whole time about how Nordstrom is terrible and how now they're like, they have to like hit, they care more about the sales goals.
Sure.
Like they're, and like that, of course, I mean, it's a retail business and retail is failing and, you know, and so they just felt all this pressure and the need to have the sales and like close the sale became and like get the numbers became more important than the customer service. And that was their whole thing to begin with.
Yeah.
So I was like, bye. That's no fun. But you know, you just got to find the gems that are like that. You know, like I found like a local like neighborhood Italian restaurant last night. where they like topped off my glass with the rest of what was in the bottle. Just was like,
see, that's what I'm talking about.
Like, yes. And then I went to another place that's like a chain a couple days before, and they put it on a scale and measured it when they poured it. And I was like, nope, not coming back here.
I hate when they do that.
I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then he took it away when there was still a little. I mean, it was like a baby splash, but don't you dare measure it out and then don't give me every single
That would bring out the Karen in me. I would be like, can I speak to your manager?
Yeah, I'm like, and then you don't want to be the one who's like, there's still some in there, when it's literally like the warm, like it's like a hot day and been sitting out in some white wine. It's like, but to me, it does. It's the principle of it, you know.
I am fully in support of your rage.
Yeah, there you go.
And there you go about the best item you can buy these days, which is a perfect comfy bra from Third Love. I mean, you don't want to be uncomfortable.
And
Your breasts deserve the best.
Did I already tell you about their sets that make it super easy and you're just like,
yes,
I love it.
People, you need to buy it. They are so cute.
Yes.
They have gazillion, more than 80 sizes, and a perfect fit promise. So if you don't love it, you can exchange or return for free for 60 days. And they use the measurements of millions of women to design the bras for all day comfort and support. And I can attest that they have succeeded. Memory foam cups, no slip straps. I always say I love their undies as well. It's comfortable. They're high quality. They don't fall apart. And so it's a real investment, but with a very affordable price tag. Third Love knows your one true fit is out there. So right now, they're offering our listeners 20% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/brain now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 20% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/brain for 20% off today.
Yes. So I know you gave me a list of movies, but this I saved this. I was just going to send this message to you text message, but I might as well tell you on here because I saved it. I saw a Bob Saget posted on his Instagram a clip from a show that's on PBS, and it's called PBS American Masters, and it's called Never Too Late, and it's about trumpeter Doc
Severson.
Severson,
yeah.
Susie, it looks like you would love this.
I would. I love Doc Severinsen.
Look, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. I'm like, who is this guy? But I know Susie love this.
Yeah, he's the band leader for Johnny Carson.
Yes.
On The Tonight Show, he played trumpet, and he also plays the theme song for Designing Women, Georgia on My Mind.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know that connection. Do you see how... And if anybody doesn't know, Susie is obsessed with Designing Women and like throws quotes in like, I'm going to know what they are.
I know.
And I've never watched the show.
I always regret it.
So I love that somehow I knew, like it was like speaking to me. I like screenshotted the thing.
Thank you.
This was like.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that.
And I'm like, I know Susie needs to watch this. So there you go. I love it.
I remember I met him.
And you guys too, listening.
I was in the symphony.
You met him?
From my high school, and he came to speak to us, and we got a Q&A at the end, and this was right after The Tonight Show with Johnny had ended and Jay had kind of, you know, started succeeding in not David Letterman. It was this big scandal. And so I asked him if he preferred Jay Leno or David Letterman.
And what did he say?
I think he said David Letterman because it was a big deal. And everybody preferred David Letterman, but Jay got the gig, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's so fun.
That is so crazy that... I mean,
you knew.
How many people like
that's
that have
so
you actually met like that?
or even would know who he is.
And I didn't even know who the hell he was. I didn't even know that.
Come on.
I was just like, I think she would like this and I need to screenshot it because I saw it on Bob Saget's Instagram story.
Wow.
What? That's...
Was Bob saying it was good?
I was deciding, well, what I saw is on this other website I follow that... 30 as fuck or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They posted this funny picture of Bob Saget reacting to a picture of his daughter. And he goes, if anybody, like, yes, I know, she looks exactly like me in a wig. Like, if one more motherfucker sends me a message about this, I'm going to lose it. Like, and I thought that was hilarious. So then I had to go click on his picture to go see if his daughter, and his was like, okay, and nothing that I wanted to, I don't think I followed him, end up following him, but I did end up looking at his story. So think about how many things I had to see, go through to get that. And now you're going to watch it and love it.
Thank you for doing that for me.
The universe just presented it. I just had to, like, take a picture.
I'm so lucky.
Yeah. Oh.
Wow. Dang. We went on a journey. Okay.
We sure did.
Moving on.
So fun. We went on a journey.
I read about this, and I thought it was real cute, so I'm going to share it with you. I have two animal stories. The first one is that I think it was a farm, like a goat farm, that was, for some reason, was struggling during COVID. I don't really know why COVID would affect a goat farm, but for whatever reason, they were strapped for cash. And so they put on their website that, like, if you were doing a Zoom call, that they would put their goats on the Zoom call for like $20. And, like, you could just talk to the goats, and they would just hang out with you and your friends. And they're making, like, thousands of dollars.
Oh, my God, I love this.
Overnight, it was just gangbusters. Everyone was, like, wanting the goats.
This is hilarious.
And I feel like, why haven't we done this?
We should definitely offer... There's a weird noise happening in my neighborhood right now.
I don't know if it's your dog.
Animal. It might be an animal. It might have been a bird. So
maybe it's a peacock. Do you get peacocks there?
We don't get peacocks. Mm. Not that I... No, it's more... They wouldn't
turkey?
Stand a fucking chance against those.
My God, you have to go look.
What the fuck is that? It sounds like an animal.
It's definitely alive. Is this the zombie apocalypse? Is this go time?
Is this go time? Where's my bag? Good, right by the door.
Is it literally right by the door?
Well, no, it's in the trunk of my car.
Okay.
Oh, speaking of which, ask me what's in the trunk of my car.
Okay, let's hear it.
Only the box that, like, I have, like, a crate, like a milk crate that's, like, designed to go in the back of a trunk.
Yeah.
With my jumper cables, my emergency kit, and a roll of tape in case I need that for shipping anything and, you know, forgot. Oh.
This is exciting.
Suze, I almost... did a video of me putting the seat up because it seems like nothing. That will be the first time. This morning was the first time in since November of 2019.
Whoa.
That I have put the seats, all of my seats up in the car with that, and my car has been empty, and I will be able to go get it cleaned.
Oh my God. This is because you have your shit together.
My God. I'm so excited.
Wow.
I swear this was like the thing that I said, I feel out of sorts. And I mean, I was like my car was always clean. Like not dirty. Like I would get a car wash regularly. I love having a clean car.
Yes, like, you do.
I love that. I felt so out of it. It was like the thing that needed to get done, like that one closet that you need to organize. And then once you do, you're like, oh, yeah, my
you
whole life
is
organized
easy.
Now.
Yeah.
This was it. I was like, oh. So that was a little aside.
I am
like
so happy for
story.
You.
Personal accomplishment and goal. So, you know.
We're all happy for you because you have been through hell.
Trunk is happy. Thank you.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, hold on. Second,
hasn't though. This shit's crazy.
Second animal story.
Oh yes,
is that they did this study about pigs. You know how pigs are supposed to be so smart, and they taught them how to play some video game, And it said the findings were that pigs can play the video game and that eventually they'll do it without even getting a reward. They just like it.
Well, I think they are getting a reward. Probably the same thing we get when we play video games. They're dopaminergic, some word like that. Pathways.
I thought you were malfunctioning there.
No, I was trying to remember how to pronounce it. I think it's dopaminergic, something. It sounds similar to that. It might be like a little bit off in somebody's. This is the part you were talking. Hey, what'd I tell you? There's going to be something Sarah doesn't know that you guys do, and you're definitely.
Here we go.
I know I know the psychology people and the therapist people, and all you guys are definitely screaming at that. But yes, those pathways are maybe being stimulated because we know video games do that to people. And because the. Right? What's the reward in the video game? What's the payout? It's like, it's designed that way. Like, I want to know what the video game is, because if there's a win, then they somehow have
I think they described it as like Pong, you know, that kind of thing. Very easy, but it said that they are farsighted though, and they lack opposable thumbs, which made it even more impressive.
They're farsighted and lack opposable. So did this cater to their
it was
like
a joystick.
Well,
I mean, how good could they be?
Not that good. But how good do you need to be to do a game like that, you know? Just like a little easy, like... Burr, 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 burr.
I mean, doesn't that make you sad, though? Because they're so delicious.
Well, they are.
They are.
But here's the thing. It's like, it's my the same thought on... We just have to, and they're so delicious, which means we should probably have it every once in a while.
True.
I think that anything that has, this is just Sarah's thoughts on, you know, based on like nothing, but whatever Sarah thinks, that animals who have fewer offspring or they take longer for the animal to like, longer gestation period, we should not be eating those like crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, old-timey farm style. Like, you have an animal and you get, like, one for, like, the whole year.
Yeah.
And you eat that. And then after that, fruits and vegetables for you. Or you save it for when you need it. Or, like, you know.
I know. We don't do that, though.
No. We're like, oh, that's delicious. I'm going to have bacon every morning. And, you know, so, yeah. Definitely stimulating those dopaminergic pathways.
Right. It just makes me sad. I wish they were disgusting. And I'd let them be.
Yeah.
Maybe someday. I'm at the, like, guilt part of meat eating.
Me too. Every day I think about it.
Me too.
Every day I think all I would be is a relationship with the vegan or vegetarian away from...
Yeah.
Like, I just need creative meals.
Okay.
Like, I just have my I should probably use HelloFresh for that and get, I'll just switch over.
Well, that's true. You could.
That's actually a good way. This is like just a Sarah having a thought, but yeah, it's a good way to like not an ad, good way to just like, introduce that. Cause then I don't have to cook any of those meals and I'll just like, yeah.
Well,
because
I mean,
3 nights a week. That,
I know the vegetarians like to pretend like all their meals are so good. And I'm really happy for them if they feel that way. And I really don't eat a lot of meat. I don't enjoy it that much. But, you know, sometimes their meals suck.
Sometimes, yeah. Vegetarian meals, yeah. Well,
like,
no,
you're not
it's the seasoning.
Anyone.
It's the, if you can season things right.
It's also the mouthfeel.
Oh.
Stop.
I will agree with that. It's a tofu and mushroom and eggplant. Don't. That is a eggplant and mushroom. Uh-uh. And don't even try to substitute my burger with a portobello mushroom. You're high.
Beyond Burger, I'll tell you what. They've done it.
Have they? I've never tried one.
I love those. Those are great. I buy them
and
all
I'm
the time.
And I'm the kind of person who you can give me like fake, like, or knock off, not like the healthy version of other things, and it could have fooled me.
Right.
Like, I think because my mom gave us all of that, like, healthy, organic-y stuff that, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't have any, like, I can't even, I'm not, like, one of those, like, nope, this isn't that, I can't have that. I'm like, yeah, sure, that's fine, tastes close enough to me, and, you know, I'll take that cauliflower pizza, sure. And I cannot get down with the vegan cheese, though. Don't
it's
even
good.
Do it. What are you talking about?
There is some good stuff. The CHAO.
There is that cashew butter that I really love. The cashew cheese. That is good, though. But the other stuff, no.
I'll tell you what is good. Playing Best Fiends for hours.
You're telling me. My God, I'll forget to eat meals if I don't look up for my game.
Top-rated mobile puzzle adventure that has us hooked. It's like lovable characters, thousands of levels, all this content, super fun challenges, and you can use it when your phone's not even connected to the internet, which is...
It is the best airplane game, period.
Going. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
It also is so when I was out fun. Of data on my phone and didn't
oh,
want
right.
to.
You did have a problem recently.
I did. Because I didn't have Wi-Fi for a bit, so there, that's a
I'm
problem.
Always checking for the latest update, too, because they add levels and yes. characters and stuff.
And they're always seasonal, too.
And you
I was
know,
like,
oh,
it's
going
to be cute.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we're not on the challenge anymore, so we want to solve puzzles. We'll just go on Best Fiends instead.
They're way better anyway.
Yeah, right. And
way
less stress.
Yes.
Just don't blame us if you become obsessed, because you will. Download Best Fiends free today on Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends Without the R, Best Fiends. Super fun.
Yes.
We have a guest today, Sarah.
Oh!
Very, very excited. I interviewed David Camp, who is the author of Sunny Days, The Children's Television Revolution That Changed America. It is such a great book. Can't recommend it enough. He's a wonderful writer. But what I really love about Sunny Days is, you know, I love Mr. Rogers. I love Sesame Street.
Oh, yes.
And he breaks down the context for how this sort of crazy serendipitous moment happened where... You know, we started producing shows that were engaging for children, helped get them ready for preschool or kindergarten, mm-hmm. and lasted forever. Like, these are institutions.
Yeah, they really are. It is wonderful.
And I loved the when I began the interview and I asked him why he wrote it or why this subject interested him and how, you know, he was... feeling down and he wanted Aww. Sunny days again.
Yes.
I love
sweeping
that.
Sweeping the clouds away.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I think a lot of people yeah. benefited from these shows and their commitment to diversity, representation,
yep. still
inclusion.
Oh. I just saw the cutest thing. I saw this post from a mom on Instagram or Twitter, something like that, where it was her daughter playing with a girl or a boy who had autism. Mm-hmm. And the mom was like trying to say like, well, it's okay. Like be slow. And the little girl goes, I know, I saw him on Sesame Street.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a character on Sesame Street. I know, mom. And was very like matter of fact, like, mom, we're fine.
They absorb it. It is so important.
Oh.
And it's important for people to see themselves represented on television and films
yes.
and media.
Yes.
So
yes.
the book is great. You'll love it. And you'll love hearing how it all came to be. And you should check it out. Sunny Days by David Camp. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you so much for coming on Brain Candy, David. I loved Sunny Days. What a treasure you've written.
Well, Susie, I love you for loving Sunny Days.
I can't wait for my listeners to read it because I know they're going to love it too. Here's what I want to know. You're kind of like this Renaissance man. I want to know how you decide what the heck you're going to write about even.
Honestly, I write things that are going to cheer me up because, you know, we're kind of living in an unhappy period of our country. We're not a happy people, the American people. And I was kind of casting about, this is 5-6 years ago now, 2015. Even then, and 2015 sounds like paradise compared to
yeah,
where we are now. But even then, there was still such polarization and ugly rhetoric. And I thought, I want to go back and study a period of American history where people did something good and it worked and it made people happy. And that's kind of what led me to that incredibly fertile period of like late 60s and early 70s children's television. You had Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Zoom, not the one that we're talking on, but the WGBH program for kids, and the Electric Company and Free to Be You and Me, all of these programs happened at the same time and kind of redefined what childhood could be in a really positive way.
When you were writing it and then talking about it after, did it cheer you up?
It certainly did, in that as I went along and things got worse and worse, culminating in this book coming out just as a pandemic's beginning, basically, it's inspirational. I'll put it that way, because one thing the pandemic laid bare was how broken things are. You know, our education system's broken, healthcare system's broken, just distribution of aid and medicine, all these systems are broken. And so if you look at how Sesame Street happened, which is a real public-private partnership between, you know, kind of well-off people who are in foundations and academia, working with the U.S. government hand in hand to accomplish this great goal, Sesame Street, the show that's now been on for 51 years. So it's kind of a roadmap for, okay, we were once in a pretty good place, then we screwed it up. And maybe this book is not just a nostalgic trawl through history, although I don't mind it if you enjoy it that way too. But also it could be a roadmap to, like, how can we repeat this success?
Well, I love that you frame the narrative as, or the story as, a social movement. It was as if all these stars aligned. Was that, do you think they were aware of that at the time, or we can only see that now looking back?
I think we can only see it now looking back, because I noticed it. I was the right age for when all of this was new. I was a toddler when Sesame Street came on the air on November 10th, 1969. So it's really me, it's not a first-person book, but it's really me looking back, you know, 30, 40 years later. And I started thinking about this, like, when I was about 30 years old, and saying, that was an extraordinary period. I was kind of lucky, you know, that I came along right at the time that Sesame Street came along and Mr. Rogers went from local show to national show. To have these programs shape my childhood and my mindset, that's kind of great. So yeah, it was with perspective. I'm so glad, Susie, you picked up on the idea of it being a social movement, because I think that's what makes the book unique, is that it looks at this stuff not just as, ha ha ha, weren't things kitschy and wacky in the 60s and 70s. It's really saying this is actually a social movement that all these amazing political undercurrents and cultural undercurrents. That's kind of what's fun and fascinating about delving into this stuff.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you still describe, much of what we see now still existed then, these sort of like conservative values and progressive values and the, you know, the clashing therein. But what do you think it was that sort of like, it felt like everything came together, because they got federal funding. And then you pointed out how there were some shifts in like cognitive psychology and their understanding of youth and early development. What do you think that was, the magic?
Well, I think it was kind of a confluence of smart people trying to do the right thing. You know, like, I kind of think we're almost in a moment like this is a very politically awakened time, let's put it that way, for all the polarization, especially among young people. We're seeing a newfound political awareness. And I kind of feel like 50-odd years ago, America was in a similar state. There was the Lyndon Johnson era, you know, so you had a Democrat in control of the House and in control of both chambers of Congress. So you kind of had and it was way more progressive than now. It wasn't the slim majority. It was a progressive majority. So there's a political will to try out some sort of like big government, and not as a pejorative thing, big government as a safety net and as a way to lift up the least fortunate among us and thereby lift us all up. Because if the least fortunate are lifted up, we all are. And as some of the things that you mentioned, like, at the same time, child psychology was a newly burgeoning field. that phrase early childhood development didn't exist until the 60s, basically. So that was suddenly a field that people were interested in. And the stigma attached to psychology, you know, seeing psychologists, that was no longer, it was getting less and less and less taboo to even talk about that. At the same time, I don't want to discount this. It was kind of wacky. It was the 60s. And you know, the fact that you had Jim Henson doing these psychedelic Muppets, and you had like even children's TV composers influenced by the Beatles and psychedelic bands and that kind of Peter Max graphic aesthetic, this sort of multicolored thing. That all of these things came together to produce something that was like perfectly engineered for kids born in the late 60s and early 70s. Like I think a lot of parents watched this and thought, this is too weird. Yeah. It's too crazy. But if you were just having, if you were a toddler just lying in a crib or crawling on the floor and your sensory intake was the Beatles and Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and what have you, it made perfect sense. You didn't know that it made perfect sense because you were little, but it made perfect sense. And I think that's why it's lasted. It spoke in a kid language that adults couldn't even pick up on.
Well, I think he did such a good job of, you're telling this story sort of, you know, from the past, but I think we're all parents, at least, thinking about the ways in which media is still controversial and screen time and this the hand-wringing about all of that, especially during the pandemic. And then you think, well, can those same ideas and values and brilliance be applied in the digital age? Do you think that that's possible?
Absolutely. And I think the big difference is that Sesame Street was so rigorously prepared, not just the entertainment part and the curricular part, but even they tested it over and over again with like basically the idea of a screen test for groups of focus groups for 4-year-olds where they really reviewed the material before it ever hit the air. And so that's kind of why Sesame Street was so right and correct and nailing it from the outset, because they spent 3 years from inception to November 10th, 1969. And
wow.
the difference between Zoom school and that is that when this pandemic went down exactly a year ago, lockdown happened. Suddenly, I felt so bad for teachers. Teachers had to improvise this muddled approach to, oh God, how do we teach through screens now? And parents and kids too. Everyone kind of had to muddle through unprepared.
Yeah.
And I think what we've learned is that, number one, we're revisiting the exact same debate they had 50 years ago. Can screens be used to teach? And number two, we have to look at how they got it right. And they got it right by being prepared. We were not prepared last year. And I think that's part of what needs to happen again. There needs to be a redoubled effort about, no matter what happens, and we're getting vaccinated in the next few weeks, this pandemic is going to occupy some brain space in all of our minds for at least a generation. If you're a kid growing up right now, you're always going to be on guard for, we could be in lockdown at any moment. You know, like we've got to, it might happen again. And I think it's smart to think that it'll happen again. And so we've got to be prepared with something better than this sort of half-hearted, disorganized Zoom school where these poor parents are stuck at home with their kids and they're trying to get them to concentrate. And the brilliance of Sesame Street was they so rigorously engineered it, both from an entertainment perspective. It was entertaining, so parents enjoyed watching it with their kids, and from an educational perspective where it maintains the kids' interest. And we need to find a way to redo that.
When you talked about how before that time, children's television had been very slapstick, patronizing to the kids, kind of mean, and not exactly educational. And there was this idea of like, is it a wasteland? Can we even do anything of importance? And then you talked about those focus groups and then how the kids engaged the material and it was interactive. I mean, they just didn't expect it, right? They thought that it was going to be zombies.
Right. Even the people at Children's Television Workshop, which is it's what's now called Sesame Workshop, the entity that produced Sesame Street, they were worried that even their own show was just going to have zombified kids with their mouths falling open and their eyes glazed watching this. And they were amazed at how much kids talked back to the screen and sang along with the song. And it was just such a nice, confluence of factors where you had kids taking this all in, and being and imitating what they saw on screen, and also feeling, and again, little kids wouldn't have this vocabulary, but their emotional intelligence was being respected. That's one thing that Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, is really good about, is that earlier shows, baby boomer shows like Howdy Doody, it was all kind of like clowns and guys in, you know, fringed buckskin cowboy jackets going like, hey, kids, we're coming at you. Woo! Ah! And so we're going to show you boys. Wah! And that was kind of assaultive to a little kid, whereas Fred Rogers talking in this really gentle way. People think he was just some weirdo who happened to be extraordinarily kind and was just winging it. But no, he was actually really rigorous himself in preparing that show. He worked with a pediatric psychiatrist named Dr. Margaret McFarland. So they fashioned all these little parts of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood to engage the kid. For example, when he walks in singing It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and he walks screen left to screen right, that's to train a kid's eye to read, to learn to read.
Can you believe that, David?
No, I love learning this stuff.
So when you cool.
Because in the English language, anyway, you read by scanning your eyes left to right. And then even when the trolley goes from his living room to the neighborhood of make-believe, that's a transition. And if anyone who's ever had nursery school age kids knows that transitions are hard for young kids.
Yeah.
Like, okay, kids, now we're going to go from the classroom to the activity room. And there's always the two kids going, I don't want to, because they can't manage that transition. So that trolley was an emblem of how you manage a transition. And kids were just absorbing this in a way that you and I as adults would not have absorbed it. They intuitively understood what was going on.
Yes, I'm from Pittsburgh, so I'm a Fred Rogers enthusiast, and we all worship him here, especially. And I worked at WQED, which was his station.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a magical place. It's almost like imbued with his essence, and it's a sacred space, at least for me. And it's because of that intentional approach that he had, and how you pointed out he cared about their interior life. They weren't just noisemakers. These were human beings with rich lives inside. And he honored that.
And the same thing with Kermit singing It's Not Easy Being Green, which is a really slow contemplative song that I think was in the very first season of Sesame Street. And theoretically, a kid should not want to watch that, because the lighting of the original version is kind of dark. It's a solo piece. The song is kind of meandering and quiet, but it just spoke to this emotional tumult that kids sometimes go through, because kids aren't smiley little kids. Kids can be depressive little characters, you know, thinking, why am I here? Am I a loser? Am I a winner? Do I fit in? Don't I fit in? And so that song really spoke to kids, again, in this way that perhaps flew over the heads of adults.
Yeah.
And so, again, respecting the emotional intelligence. And Jim Henson had an intuitive grasp of that, too, I think.
Yeah, he's a magical person. That's the thing. Like, I am so impressed with how they did all this and how intentional they were with each part. And then that it worked.
Yeah.
That it really did work. And that people were engaged and are still, like, they still care about it. Do you notice when people talk about it that they become, like, children kind of again?
Well, even the stupid debate about, like, is Dr. Seuss being canceled? And of course, Dr. Seuss is not being canceled. But the fact that people still, of all political stripes, hold that body of work so sacredly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers are in that same category. They're sort of totems of American childhood that you don't mess with. And you don't mess with it because they were so profoundly meaningful to all of us as kids. And they still are. I don't know about the youngest kids, but to multiple generations, Seuss, Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, and even shows like Free to Be You and Me, which Marlo Thomas did, they are held sacred by people. And you don't question their legacy, because it's hurtful, because they shaped the worldview of 100 million of the 300 million Americans out there. You know?
It was formative. It really was. And I can only imagine what it was like for people of color, and how even more so to be represented maybe for the first time. And you did such a great job of describing the ways in which, at least on Sesame Street, they really listened to feedback and weren't defensive. Can you describe some of that?
Sure. Joan Ganz Cooney was one of the co-founders of Sesame Street, and she was kind of basically the producer of the whole show. And she wanted the show intentionally from the beginning to reach inner city black kids. So that was her main audience when the show first launched. And of course, it became a show for all kids. But at the time, so they, from season one, they had black cast members and white cast members. But Hispanic viewers were watching at home saying, hey, where are we? And a kind of coalition of Hispanic groups, some from California, some from Texas, some from Florida, some from New York, met with her in her office. And it was not a happy meeting. It was a really contentious one where they were like, what the hell are you doing, Joan? You're like, where are we? Whatever. It was argumentative. But she didn't push them away and say, no, look, I'm the producer of this damn show. Get the hell out of my office. She kind of heard them out and said, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. And that's why they cast Emilio Delgado as Luis and Sonia Manzano as Maria in season three in 1971. And those two actors and characters were on the show for more than 40 years. And that's amazing. And also that's, for a lot of Americans, myself included, my first and many other kids' first exposure to Spanish-speaking people, to in Emilio's case, Chicano culture, and in Sonia's case, Puerto Rican culture. So that was such a huge learning experience. And I just want to add, Susie, about black kids, too, because you mentioned this a little earlier. There were so few black characters regularly on TV prior to Sesame Street that Jet Magazine, the Black Weekly, used to have a page in the back page of each issue saying, black people on TV this week, meaning like,
I couldn't believe
hunt them down. It was like Hogan's Heroes is on at 8 p.m. and then like Star Trek is on at 9 with Michelle Nichols as Lieutenant Uhura. Sammy Davis Jr. will be on the Merv Griffin show. So it was like they knew that there'd be like six black people on TV all week and not as regular.
That's
so
awful.
And so for Sesame Street to start as a 5-day-a-week show with Loretta Long and Matt Robinson as two of the main characters on 5 days a week, that was a watershed. I had Questlove from The Roots write the foreword to this book.
Yeah.
And he was born in 71. And he talks about being a little kid watching in Philadelphia, turning Sesame Street on and saying, that's the first time I ever saw myself on television. And it was aspirational and motivational because if I can see someone like myself on television, that means I can be on television someday. And forget about even being in the entertainment field. It just legitimizes that
you
someone
matter.
Who looks like me. Yeah, matters. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was powerful and important, but it was so cool because it wasn't a big whoop. Like, it's not as if, at least I as a viewer, I wasn't sitting there thinking, how come all of these people are dark skinned? It just didn't occur to you. You were having too much fun. It was just too entertaining. I mean, that's cool, dude. Did you feel emotional when you wrote it? Because I teared up several times during the book because it's so special. Did you ever feel like that? Or is it just me?
You know, it's funny. In the course of writing it, Susie, sometimes I got too emotional and had to step back.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I think this happens with any writer, sometimes you get bored with your material. Like, you realize, like, I'm not feeling it today. And I actually went to the emotional space to motivate myself. I was like, okay, David, why are you writing this book? Oh, yeah, because it changed your life and every other kid's life.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about songs. You start thinking about Rita Moreno and Morgan Freeman on The Electric Company.
Yeah.
You start thinking about, the Free to Be You and Me song with that little calliope playing at the beginning. And, you know, uh-oh, here come the water.
Yeah, man.
I start to cry a little, and that actually motivated me to finish that damn chapter.
Yeah.
This stuff mattered so much.
It did, and it still does. But you know, things change and evolve, and you go over the HBO deal and the consequences of that and how something that was meant for lower-income folks was now becoming a luxury item. And then you also, let me say what words you said. You said, the hipness, depth, and variety are no longer there. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, I want to preface this by saying I don't want to badmouth current Sesame Street because they're still doing God's work.
I mean, they do.
They're still, you know, producing bona fide educational TV, and they're still addressing marginalized kids or marginalized parts of the population. They have characters.
Yep.
They have an autistic Muppet to teach kids about people who are not neurotypical. And, you know, South African Sesame Street had an HIV positive character just to teach kids about that in case they identified with someone at home. They're still doing this really audacious stuff. But is the show as cool or as fun as it was in the 70s? No, it isn't. That was a more, there's a looser, more freewheeling time, I think, less cautious. The other thing, Susie, is that kids are basically born TV literate now. So I didn't start watching Sesame Street until I was, you know, 4 or 5, really. And that was the bullseye demographic group they were going for. Now, Sesame Street is skewed more towards 2 and 3 year olds. And so by its nature, it's kind of less sophisticated than it used to be because their audience is basically a younger audience in an early stage of development.
That's a good point. I do like the, you know how in the early days, there was that sense of like, you said it's not antiseptic. Like it was, there were dents in the garbage can and there was like clothes hanging on the line. Now it does feel cleaner and more colorful in that sort of typical childhood television type of way. But maybe I'm just like, I miss my youth. I'm just getting old.
No. There's a picture of youth for starters.
I wish.
But beyond that, no, if you actually do a compare and contrast, if you were to do a split screen, like 2021 Sesame Street is super brightly colored and the street is gentrified. And if you go back on YouTube and watch those early shows from like 69 through really 79, the whole first decade, it's not just the quality of the film. The color palette is more gritty. And you have graffiti, you have laundry on washing lines, and you have dented garbage cans. I always love, there's a story early in the book that Loretta Long, who played Susan, tells me, where she said, you forget that there was a time when people had no idea what Sesame Street was. Yeah. And when she got the job, she calls her parents, who are living on a farm in Michigan, and she tells them, I got a TV show. They're like, great, darling, tell us what your TV show is like. And she said, you know, I'm sitting on this dirty city stoop, and I'm talking to an 8-foot-tall yellow bird. And this is 1969, mind you. They thought she was having some sort of drug-induced hallucinogenic experience. They were like ready to rescue her from whatever she was going through. She said, thank God I didn't tell them about Oscar. She said, and then this thing comes out of a garbage can and yells at you. She said that would have sealed it. They would have said our daughter is having
a
breakdown of some sort. Yeah. But the point being is that was really audacious. I mean, to even do a children's program set on a city block where everyone hangs out on a stoop, that was so not done in TV. And so it's still audacious now, but it's much more cleaned up.
Yeah, I just loved reading your book. You felt that sense of like what you take for granted, that this show just is and always was. It's an institution. Mm-hmm. Didn't exist, and they created it from nothing. And that's magic. And I wanted to know, because how the heck long did it take you to do this? Because the stories are detailed that you tell. It's as if it's happening now. You're describing conversations and meetings and brainstorms. And I'm like, how did he get all this information? Tell me your secret.
Well, the first secret is interview everyone old as soon as you can, because they'll die on you. And there were, I don't mean to be,
that's a good tip. About that,
but people, it did happen to me where people I wanted to interview passed away right when I tried to reach out to them. And I was really lucky to, first of all, catch everyone who's still around, while like Joan Ganz Cooney and Lloyd Morissette, who co-founded Sesame Street, Rita Moreno, who God help us, God love her, is still going strong. There are a bunch of people I was able to catch who were formative in developmenting those programs. The other thing is, the University of Maryland has this amazing collection of all the children's television workshop papers. And sort of you can see in real time, like all the notes of like the minutes of meetings where they're discussing Count Von Count for the first time. What if we had this vampire Muppet who said, I love to count 1, 2, 3. Like they're discussing all that stuff in real time for the first time. So it's pretty easy to recreate that once you
I cannot believe you got to see all that. Didn't you feel so lucky?
Oh, I did. And I also got to go to Jim Henson's workshop in Long Island City, Queens, where they make the Sesame Street Muppets. It's still awesome because there's still drawers where there's a drawer labeled like Grouch Eyes, and they slid it out for me. It has like different like monobrows for Oscar, depending on the facial expression he's making with the eyes attached.
No.
Yeah, it was like going to like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
I mean, you're living a dream out there. Yeah, that's what made me sad, though, about that your book came out during the pandemic, because when I reached out to you, that's when I first heard about it. And I'm pretty tuned into the book world, and I was so mad because people need to read it, and you really kind of got ripped off. Did you feel that way?
Well, yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, because it started, or I came out kind of early in the pandemic, it made people search for good news. And a book called Sunny That's Days, which is about depicting what I truly consider a sunny era in American history, at least for these particular people and my generation of children. That, at least, I think that powered some people through.
Okay,
it was kind of a happy read during a grim moment. But as far as like getting out on the hustings and promoting it and doing book tours and giving fun talks and all that stuff, and I was supposed to do it with the surviving actors from Sesame Street and some of these other shows, couldn't do that. So in that way, yeah, I sort of got ripped off.
Yeah.
But look, Susie, we're here.
I know.
We're here. Isn't that
You're like my therapist now. It's okay.
Yeah.
Because I would be so sad if I put all the time into writing this masterpiece and then didn't get the fun bit of like seeing people get excited in person and all the events and stuff. But I just hope everybody reads it because it's wonderful and it does make you feel good and it does bring hope. Like, I want this to be applied. I want another period of sunny days, David.
Right. And that's my intent too. If that title is not just backward looking, like here's a story of the sunny days of 1968 to 1975. It's also just like, sunny days are here again if you want them. Like, hint, hint.
Yeah.
But for you younger readers, like you're of the generation, the people who are like Generation Z and millennials, you're the generation who can imitate what's described here and bring about a new period of sunny days.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What do you feel is the future for children's television based on what you learned?
Based on what I learned, I think that we're kind of in a middling, mediocre period. But I think this pandemic, perversely, one of the good things that's going to come out of it is a redoubled effort to reach kids through screens in a more rigorous and more entertaining way. And we can't lose sight of the fact of how entertaining all these shows were. And that's part of the fun of the book.
Do you have a favorite song from Sesame Street?
Oh, gosh. You put me on the spot.
Well, I'll tell you mine is Put Down the Ducky. I love Put Down the Ducky. Or anytime it's like punny, like Cereal Girl instead of Material Girl. That was a classic.
Right.
Those ones.
I kind of like the melancholy ones. Like It's Not Like Being Green. And Ernie has one, I Don't Want to Live on the Moon, where he fantasizes about how cool it would be to live on the moon. It's kind of a sweet solo ballad. I like those because I think that reached me as a boy,
a sort of
moody, contemplative little boy.
Nice.
So
that's great. I mean, they're all great. Was it just like a bunch of people? I know there were different writers of the songs, but did it change a lot over time?
It did change a lot over time, but the main guy at the beginning was a guy named Joe Raposo, who he composed the theme song and all the incidental music. And he is, Joan Ganz-Cooney said, the word genius is overused, but Jim Henson and Joe Raposo were both geniuses. And that was one of the huge strokes of luck, is Sesame Street enlisted two, not hyperbolically used, two true geniuses.
Yeah.
And Joe Raposo, definitely one of them.
I mean, because that really kept kept you on, you know, engaged and into it and learning. Okay, wait, one more thing, and then I ask the final question. So was there anything that you discovered that surprised you about the history of children's television? Or did it feel like, okay, that makes sense, that makes sense?
I never realized how tenuous it was. Like, Sesame Street was considered an experiment, and they never were in it for the long haul. They thought that Sesame Street might just be a thing, like a lab experiment that would last one season. And it was that way for like the first 10 years. There wasn't a sense that...
Can you believe that?
It was like, will we have the funding to do another season? Will we have the funding to another season? And then the fact that it's this... you know, unassailable institution now. That was not a gimme. That was something that developed over time.
Okay, last thing we ask everybody that comes on. Mm-hmm. If you have a car, what do you keep in the trunk of your car? Do you have anything in the trunk of your car?
This is a brain candy question. This is not a related to the book question, correct?
Okay. We have a theory that whatever's in the trunk of your car is sort of representative of where you are in your life.
Oh, well.
So it better be interesting.
No, I would say it's going to be so damn boring then.
Mine is too. I'm like, it's empty.
I have recycling, you know, the reusable shopping bags and a snow brush and the scraper. Because I'm in the Northeast, where we still have snow on the ground, so I know that's a really like a virtue signaling answer, but that's the damn truth.
That's what I have in mind is reusable bags right now. But the pandemic has changed things because we're not, and at least I'm not in my car very much. So I think emptiness is probably representative still. but I'll mark yours down. That's your answer. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I hope everybody reads Sunny Days, The Children's Television Revolution That Changed America. Thank you, David Camp. You're a delight.
As are you, Susie. Thank you.
Did you know that everyone has an aura? Do you know what color your aura is? Maybe you have a fiery red personality or a quiet and calm blue or green. You could be an organized and methodical yellow or an explosive purple. Come join me, Mystic Michaela, on my podcast, Know Your Aura, to find out all about how your personality can be explained in colors.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.